Well, Jeffrey Epstein's longtime patron and financial backer, Leslie Wexner, was finally brought before lawmakers on Wednesday, but not in Congress, in a congressional hearing room. They went to his house. You know what? We'll come to you. Don't travel to Washington. Most people, when they get a congressional deposition, they have to get their happy ass into a congressional chair, but not billionaires. Not if you own Victoria.
They're different.
Yeah, totally different. So they went to Ohio to conduct a closed door deposition about his decades long relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. No Republicans attended in person. Okay. Why? There was no public testimony. Now we're getting small bits of this in video clips, but we didn't for a while. So, yeah, must be nice to be, you know, so rich and connected. Now, remember, he was Epstein's main source of funds for years. When asked if he'd ever, even though we now have proof that he was named by the Justice Department as a co-conspirator, he was asked if he'd ever been interviewed by the FBI or the DOJ or any law enforcement. He said no. I'm brand new here. Now, I mean, I've had people say my name a bunch, but I've been living my best life. Here is his statement he released. It's very much, I'm an old man. I have this nice family. I'm too old for this kind of thing. Epstein only had power of attorney because I was too busy with my very important empire that was started with bootstraps and shoelaces and a couple coins on the floor. Basically, that's the story. Okay, well, for years, investigative journalist Whitney Webb has argued that Wexner was not a peripheral figure. This is not brand new to her. It is brand new to the media. And so we're so lucky to have her join us today. I believe this is one of your first interviews since all of this document dump. So thank you so much. It's great to see you. How do you feel about Lex Wexner? Thanks. Getting this, you know, billionaire treatment.
Great to see you.
Yeah, well, nice to see you all, too, and thanks for having me. Yeah, so it's really not, it should be pretty telling to everyone that he had Congress come to him instead of having to go to Congress, exactly how Leslie Wexner operates. He's the richest man in Ohio. As I've documented in my books in a series of articles, he's been linked to crimes that have been covered up by the Columbus Police Department, leaving murders, among other things, unsolved to allow him to continue to engage in the impunity that he has enjoyed pretty much his, you know, ever since he began engaging in criminal activity, which, as far as I can tell, at least goes back to at some point in the early 1980s. Around the time he was, you know, becoming a billionaire, which I believe was in 1985 or so. And I mean, honestly, you know, Congress has said that they're going to release the deposition and videos of it and are making it like a big show that there's been accountability because Wexner, who was named a potential or was named a co-conspirator and they redacted that, you know, that he's finally been interviewed in connection with his role in Jeffrey Epstein's network. I mean, it's just honestly bonkers. I think what we can anticipate to see in that video, if and when it is released, is a lot of softball questions, Wexner denying everything, and then being like, yeah, okay, thanks for your time.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for flying out. I hope you had a nice lunch here at my mansion in Ohio, but I'm not going to Washington, D.C. anytime soon. Do you think that there will be any prosecutions? We've seen now a member, a former PM in Norway arrested. We have Prince Andrew arrested in the UK. I think those are the only
two. He was released.
Oh, he was released? Okay.
He was released after 11 to 12 hours, I believe.
Okay. So, yes. So, but my question is, that's the only two. One of them's been released. Do you think we're going to see any other actual arrests in the United States, prosecutions?
Yeah, I don't anticipate Leslie Wexner being arrested at any point. He is far too powerful, and his money is everywhere. And honestly, he has extremely deep ties to numerous officials in the Israeli government through his philanthropies. He focused pretty much the bulk of the Wexner Foundation on training up prominent figures first in the U.S. In the Jewish community in particular. And now those fellows, those Wexner fellows, essentially run AIPAC. It has an extremely close relationship with AIPAC, obviously one of the most powerful lobbying groups in the United States. And the other side of his leadership training via his foundation has been with Israeli public officials who have, you know, these relationships as a result of that. With Wexner. And I doubt, you know, given, you know, AIPAC's influence, as well as, you know, what you touched on earlier with Israel's role with Epstein, it just does not seem particularly likely in any capacity. And I would also refer to the fact that one of the things that will never be investigated is the role of Epstein and also Wexner in this scandal that was covered up in the mid-1990s under the Clinton administration that's remembered today as Chinagate, but was obviously a lot larger than that. It was a smuggling operation that utilized Southern Air Transport, which you'll remember as the CIA front that was used to smuggle drugs and weapons during the Iran-Contra era. After the Iran-Contra era, the Iran-Contra crowd utilized the same network again to facilitate Chinagate, and they used Southern Air Transport, which came into direct connection to be dominant in that same period of time, was dominated by Leslie Wexner and Jeffrey Epstein, and they had it relocated not that far from New Albany, Ohio, just to run their cargo ostensibly for the Limited. From the Rickenbacker Airport in Ohio to Hong Kong. And people like Ohio's inspector general called it the Mayor Lansky route because he argued they were affiliated with the mob. And Columbus PD, just a few years prior, had produced a document linking Leslie Wexner to the mob and his network in the murder of the lawyer for the Limited, Arthur Shapiro. And in that document, they detailed extensive ties of Wexner to organized crime affiliates. And as I noted in my book, citing Catherine Austin Fitz, she was at an event and overheard a government official say that Leslie Wexner was one of the main launderers for organized crime cash flows in the United States. And this is something, as I've detailed in my book, that Epstein was very involved with this network that involves organized crime and intelligence, specifically in allowing them to illicitly move funds and in money laundering. And so, I mean, arguably, Epstein was a front for that for Leslie Wexner. And this is stuff that they absolutely will... They just can't touch with a 10-foot pole without massive reverberations, you know, for the national security state of the U.S., which has been beholden to this, I guess, shadow government of sorts in which Epstein operated. But he was a middleman for it. He was not the head of it. And so until there's an investigation into the people behind Epstein, including Wexner, and justice there, I think most of what we're going to end up seeing is going to be superficial. And maybe more will be admitted or discovered in these Epstein files, but don't expect the government to necessarily do anything about it.
Right. Superficial is the right word, because it seems like, and we don't have the full tape, but Democrats just were like, what did you know? Nothing? Okay, that's fine. We're going to go talk to the cameras now. So they didn't actually come with details of why'd you kick people out for asking about this power of attorney? Why would he have more rights than you to your estate? How come he can buy islands and you just kind of don't know, which is what, you know, you and I might come with a lot more homework and say, explain these things. And they let him get away with like, I just don't know. So why do you? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say a lot of Wexner attempted to wash his hands of this years ago, saying that they disentangled themselves in 2007. And since then, it's now been shown that they were communicating a year after that. So now it's proven that he was lying. But basically, you know, the excuse he gave is that Epstein embezzled money from the foundation, but they never showed any proof of that.
Right.
Money was moved around.
He's like, I'll never get an accounting.
But there's no evidence that Epstein embezzled it. Yeah. They never charged him. They were. So if you want to believe the Wexners that Epstein embezzled $42 million, they were just like, OK, that's fine. Bye. Keep the $42 million.
Friend of the show, Derek Brose, just wrote a piece about Les Wexner's very bad week, because not only he had to testify in front of Congress, but also in the OSU sexual abuse scandal. And there's a whole hornet's nest there tied to, of course, his brands and OSU. I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, he's one of the main donors to OSU. I think their medical school is named after him. He's been on like the board of overseers or trustees of OSU for a long time. I'm not sure of his specific connection to the sex scandal, but I think it's worth looking into, considering that not only do you have, you know, for example, as we have just discussed, his connection to Jeffrey Epstein, but other executives that worked under L. Brands for Wexner, including, I believe, the former head of Abercrombie and Fitch, have been charged with sex crimes against minors. So yeah. Why is this a repeating pattern around Wexner money?
Right.
Such a good point. You know, so many people have been debanked. We've had friends of the show that have been debanked on a regular basis. And I was literally sitting with a journalist one afternoon and he said, oh, my God, they just shut my PayPal down. They just shut down all of my information. I can't get access to my funds. A great reporter who was covering the Ukraine war just shut down. Well, banks cancel accounts, freeze cards all the time. With Rumble Wallet, you control your money. Not a bank, not a government, not a tech company, not even Rumble can touch it. It's yours on the blockchain. Check it out. You can buy several digital assets like Bitcoin, Tether Gold, all in one place. Tether Gold is real gold on the blockchain with ownership of physical gold bars. It's not only a wallet to buy and save, but it also allows you to support your favorite creators by easily tipping them with the click of a button. There'll be no fees when you tip any channel, anybody out there. So check them out at wallet.rumble.com. Again, download Rumble Wallet today. Open an account and step away from big banks for good. Wallet.rumble.com.
Now, I'm very curious because I only in these files learned about Dennis Hirsch, who took over for Wexner. And he said, look, Dennis Hirsch had the same power of attorney, the same. Is that true? And do we know anything about continued involvement? Or is there a credible story that, like, it ended with Epstein?
What do you mean it ended with Epstein?
Like
ended
any with Epstein? Kind of, you know, suspicion, any cloud of suspicion ended around Les Wexner when he sent Epstein packing in 2007.
You mean in 2007, Wexner stopped engaging in any and all potential criminal activity?
And so right. That is his story, is I was never connected to any criminal activity. And then Dennis Hirsch comes in and then there's no cloud of suspicion ever again. So I don't know much about Dennis Hirsch. He says in this deposition, in this statement that, you know, Dennis Hirsch had the same power over my estate that Epstein always had once I replaced him. So what do you know about Dennis Hirsch, and is that true? And he's dead now.
I haven't actually followed Wexner's finances extensively beyond the connection with Epstein. So that ends around the time of Epstein's first arrest. And obviously from that point on, Epstein rebranded as a tech investor and got involved with people, a lot of the big tech people like Peter Thiel, and was moving money around for people like Leon Black and Bill Gates and what have you. So seemingly moved on from him in that period. But given, you know, a lot of his activities earlier on from that period, which I have studied extensively, I don't really anticipate that a lot of Wexner's activities that are less than legal would have discontinued just because he replaced Epstein with someone else.
Right. All on the up and up now.
Yeah. It's all good. You know, you've been reporting on the Epstein files for years, or what's, you know, Jeffrey Epstein specifically for years. What do you, since mm-hmm. we haven't had a chance to talk with you since these files dropped and you haven't done any interviews about it, What is genuinely new to you in these files that you maybe didn't know before? What changes the story? And what's just like maybe repackaged material that you've known for a long time?
So, you know, I haven't had a chance to, I mean, it's like millions of files, so I can't really speak to the whole dump and say, but it's definitely corroborated a lot of things that I've reported in the past. That's Israeli intelligence stuff. I've been working on a story on and off since 2023 that I'm actually about to release, but it was about this sheik who has now been noted as having been redacted by the DOJ, who was sending torture videos to Epstein. I was following that guy for a while, and then all Drop Site published emails between them last fall, and now there's even more that are just extremely disturbing this time. So that really opens up that story even more, and I'm actually kind of glad that I ended up waiting a couple of years to publish it, just because it'll be more comprehensive now, because that's a story that really goes back to the Bush administration, and not a lot has been said about Epstein and his time at the Bush administration. Allegedly, the sweetheart deal, you know, received approval from higher ups in the Bush administration. According to Nick Bryant, it was either former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez or it was George W. Bush himself. And if you look at that particular relationship, it was going on in the Bush administration and may have had a role in the Bush's wanting, or Gonzalez potentially wanting to keep the heat, or help keep the heat off of Jeffrey Epstein. But there's a lot of things, and it's hard to cover them all, because as a, you know, for a long time, it should have been pretty clear to people that have followed this case closely that there are a lot of different angles, because Epstein had a lot of interest and put and directed money to a lot of different avenues. So one example is transhumanism. Another is his interest in eugenics. These are reflected in the emails that have been released, his interest in cryptocurrency and stable coins and Bitcoin, things of that nature. I mean, really any other angle you want to talk about from, you know, the period these emails cover is reflected in there. But what's interesting is that there aren't a lot of emails from the early 2000s when some of the stuff with the Bush administration that I'll be publishing a report on soon were going on. And it you know, some of these new releases paint that in a more interesting light than maybe, say, before their release. So, again, I think people are going to continue to find things, because there's, you know, 3 million files or so to dig through. But ultimately, you know, what's going on in this case is you have Epstein fronting for a broader network. And so keeping the focus on Epstein, I mean, it's important, obviously, to understand what he was doing. But we have to understand, too, and what I've endeavored to show is that he was fronting for a larger group that still very much have their claws over the U.S. government. And obviously the future of the U.S. and much more. And so we should pay attention to that, and also not become so distracted by searching for things in the files that we, you know, ignore the fact that, you know, for example, Israel, who is very involved with Epstein and allegedly used Comprobant and blackmail to manipulate U.S. policy, has been trying for decades to get the U.S. to go to war with Iran on that's behalf. That could very well happen. So let's not forget to pay attention to other things and get distracted at a time when, you know, the people that Epstein helped serve, among other groups, might be finally getting what they want at a major cost for American lives and money, and obviously other civilian lives, among other things. I guess there's a lot more I could say, too, but ultimately, I think there's a lot more needs to be done in investigating Epstein's activities as it relates to finances. There's a lot of ties to things, various financial crises, efforts to short currencies around the world. He was a known Forex trader. He worked with a lot of currency traders and had connections to them. People like Jimmy Goldsmith, for example, and others that were referred to by the New York Times in the 90s as a cabal of, you know, currency traders that were basically destroying whole economies. And pretty much everyone in that cabal has ties to the Rothschild banking dynasty, which Epstein in these recent files acknowledge he represents. But that's quite clear that was the case. If you read my book, Robert Maxwell openly fronted for them, among other interests. And so if we don't follow these threads, as I've, you know, been saying, away from Epstein and higher up, you know, he was being puppeteered by people, and he was obviously abused to them. I think the narrative that Epstein was an idiot and all of this, maybe he didn't use good grammar in emails, but he was obviously sought out for his abilities in, you know, illicit finance and, you know, smuggling, among other things. So I think, you know, it's important to keep all of that in mind if we actually want to understand what was going on here and have any meaningful pursuit of justice.
Yeah. A lot of things you just said there, and I want to unpack. So, let's just talk about this. So Natalie wants to ask you about the Clintons, which we will, the upcoming depositions. We'll get there in a minute.
Oh, good.
I want to follow up with you on the Sultan story, because you said you've been working on that since like 2023. on Ben Suliem, who now has stepped down. Big ties with that Epstein scandal, obviously, in Dubai, and their friendship there. So maybe we could dive more deeply into that. And then I also wanted to, there's a lot I want to talk about here. So, and any
ask
kind
her
of
one question.
I know, I'm just sorry. There's so many people firing questions here in our chat room as too. So take the Sultan stuff here. What do we know about this guy? How dirty was he? And what was he involved with Epstein? Maybe you can unpack that a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away because I would like the article to come out because I like having my sources publicly available when I go out and publicly talk about stuff. But essentially, this was a guy that almost successfully took over every major port in the United States. And it was facilitated to the outrage of Congress by top people in the Bush administration, some of whom later engaged in the Epstein cover-up. And so if you've been following some of this recent reporting in the emails, of Epstein's relationship with this guy, they say the earliest they can date it to is 2006. There is photographic evidence it happened earlier at the time that this group was lobbying these top Bush officials to sign off on this movement. It was really an acquisition of the existing port operator by Dubai Ports World, which is what Ben Suliem was managing. And intimately involved in this is a guy that I was initially following and was a source of my article initially, which is Andrew Farkas, who's long been known as Andrew Cuomo's money man, as it were. And a lot has come out about his relationship with Epstein as well, but he's been a frequent business partner of this guy and connected him with Trump, for example, because with a DP World affiliated real estate firm, Trump did a lot of his Dubai based and UAE based building, including on the Palm Islands, which this guy ultimately controlled. And it gets crazier than that, if you can believe it. For example, Farkas has intimate ties to the missing HUD money that Catherine Austin Fitz has talked about at length for decades. It's pretty much provable that he was involved in siphoning a lot of it off, and then gets intimately involved with this particular network, including Epstein, who was a known money launderer for the Iran-Contra crowd. And this, shadow government of sorts. And then, as we know from the later releases, these were they were very involved with Epstein's activities at the Virgin Islands. The Sheikh helped them purchase, helped him purchase his island when he normally wouldn't have been able to. This team of him and Farkas intimately involved in USVI stuff, even beyond Epstein, co-owned a marina with Epstein that he needed to control in order to traffic girls to and from his island. And also, as I'll be reporting, a very disturbing proprietary telecom system that wouldn't have been accessible to anyone but them. So there's a lot of very disturbing things going on there. And I would add, too, that Andrew Farkas was listed as a reference by Jeffrey Epstein for one of his USVI companies, along with Jess Staley, which was apparently the jumping off point to investigate Jess Staley as part of this now settled court case between the USVI and JP Morgan. But if they went after Jess Staley for that, why didn't they go after Farkas when he was, listed in the same spot? Yeah. And I would argue it's because he is way too close. Farkas is way too close to top, very high ranking figures in the Trump administration that are intimately involved in Middle Eastern affairs.
Right. Jeez.
Maybe you can unpack that piece a little bit more, the Middle Eastern affairs piece, as we barrel towards war with Iran, probably on March 1st, according to sources we've been speaking
Jared Kushner.
Jared Kushner buying up, Gaza, and then the Israeli piece. I know people, and I want you to speak for yourself, people have conflated, what you have said about Israel and the Mossad connections and CIA, and people like Whitney Webb says he's a Mossad agent, and you have to come out and correct people on that. So now that we hear about the Israeli connections in the apartment, the security system and all of that, What can you say about the Middle Eastern Israeli connections with Epstein now?
And that are still inside the Trump White House that you just said. That's
right.
Fascinating.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah. So, well, regarding Andrew Farkas, the main connection, the closest connection there, well, he's obviously close with Trump himself, but also he's very intimately involved with the Kushner family. And a lot of the money behind Kushner family real estate deals actually traces back to Andrew Farkas, not the Kushners themselves. So people have argued that Kushner has an outsized influence on the Trump administration. So if true, I doubt any meaningful pursuit of Andrew Farkas would happen, even though he was involved in the infrastructure for the trafficking itself, among other things. And as far as Epstein's role to the Middle East in general, so it depends on what Middle Eastern country you're talking about. There's obviously the UAE ties and his involvement with Saudi Arabia, specifically Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince. He was involved in advising their sovereign wealth funds, apparently of both countries. His ties to the Saudis allegedly go back to the 1980s or so. If you may remember, he was found... one of his residents that was raided, because not all of them were, contained an Austrian passport that had a lot of stamps for Saudi Arabia and listed Saudi Arabia as an address. Actually, this ties in kind of to the Prince Andrew story a little bit, because... in this period of time, Epstein was allegedly the mentee of an arms dealer named Douglas Lease, who was leading the representation of the UK's BAE Systems and creating, which would later win the Al Yamaha deal, which is the basis for UK-Saudi military relationship. And it was a hugely significant arms deal for Britain and BAE Systems. Prince Andrew, in that role as a trade representative, would later step in to prevent investigating the legality of aspects of that deal, and was also a big, salesperson globally for weapons, for BAE Systems particularly, which, again, is significant in that it ties back directly to, Epstein's own mentor in arms smuggling. Bin Salman himself, when he first came out, it was a big charm offensive, right? But then he started promoting like this post-oil vision for Saudi Arabia, and a lot of the things he was promoting openly involved things that were funded by Epstein. You may remember, for example, he gave Sophia the Robot citizenship. And that robot was funded with Epstein money in part. The people involved there did that. So, and they've reported, since 2019, but I think the photographs are now available, that Epstein had pictures with prominent people from, the Gulf countries, including Mohammed bin Salman, including Emirati sheikhs. And another thing to note there, as far as the UAE ties go, is that Epstein had a relationship with the bank BCCI in the 1980s and potentially up until it collapsed with 1991, which was very important to this network in which he operated. And BCCI was investigated to an extent, not as fully as I would have liked, by the U.S. Senate. And there's a U.S. Senate report on BCCI you can read. And if you go to the end and sort of the appendix, they leave as an uninvestigated lead the fact that this bank, which was basically a CIA shadow bank, was running a sex trafficking operation very similar in terms of how it functioned to what Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were doing. But in the Senate report itself, it says that these mainly girls, many of them were prepubescent girls, were being basically pimped out to Emirati sheikhs, and some of them would return with extreme bodily injuries from the encounter. Please go read that yourself, because these are family lines, the way this stuff operates in the UAE. So it's very possible that this sheikh that Epstein got involved with later is like the son of, or maybe even one of the people that engaged in that kind of activity with BCCI. It was never investigated. So again, this stuff needs to be very properly investigated, and there's been a pattern of cover-up for a long time. Who covered up BCCI in 1991? It was then Attorney General William Barr, who came back in the first Trump administration when Epstein was offed.
Yeah.
Covering stuff up again.
Right. Okay, where should we go?
We can get into Israel now if you want. Sorry,
well,
I just felt like... yeah, what people know about.
But that's
Israel
a tangled web.
And the other stuff.
That is important. I think that's not unrelated, because this drop site news revelation that Israel was, you know, running security for the apartment that Epstein was in and Ehud Barak was there, it tells us unequivocally that there are foreign governments that have intelligence that our government does not. So we would never see things in our own justice.gov/Epstein, things that may be in the hands of Israel or Iran. Even Iran is saying, you know, we have some evidence of U.S. corruption, too. We don't know what to make of that. What do you make of that?
If Israel has stuff, they're obviously not going to share it, but they have a history of doing this stuff, even to their own operatives. So as an example, like Robert Maxwell, he was filmed and Israel filmed him having sex with, a variety of women when he was in Israel domestically visiting for various purposes while he was working for Israeli intelligence. They kept files on their own. So if they do that to their own, I think the Epstein case shows that they definitely do that to other people as well. As I've noted in my work, you know, this type of behavior in which Epstein engaged in is not anomalous. And a lot of governments have done this for a long time, particularly this network, which Epstein was involved in, which, again, I've argued for a long time is transnational in scope, but involves, you know, probably most closely the U.S., Israel, and then former Soviet bloc countries, as well as Russia. And a lot of that is thanks to people like Robert Maxwell and the people that he worked with. To sort of tether that all together, if you will. But ultimately, the goal was to globalize organized crime. I argue it's at this point defined itself into a cartel, and they're really calling the shots, as it were, with a lot of this stuff. So one of the ways that they've done that historically is through recording people and compromising positions. So obviously, I can refer you to my books, because I unpack a lot of people in this network going back to the 1940s, engaging in that type of activity. But another thing I argue is that Epstein, the type of sex blackmail activity he was engaging in is no longer needed to blackmail people. You can do all of that stuff digitally now. And I think it's no coincidence that Epstein told Ehud Barak to check out Palantir, which I argue in my book is really you don't need an Epstein blackmail style operation if you have Palantir operating. And there's a straight line, as I've noted in other past articles, from the Promise software scandal, which involved Israel, the CIA, this exact network, including Robert Maxwell, among other figures that pop up repeatedly in the story, all the way through Palantir's creation as a rebranding of the Bush era total information awareness.
How dirty is Peter Thiel, Alex Karp, and their connections with Epstein in all of this?
So I'm obviously no friend of Peter Thiel. I've been very critical of him for some time. Back in 2019, I reported about his co-investment with Jeffrey Epstein in Carbine, previously Rapportee, which was headed up by Ehud Barak, and he chaired the board. But they have since rebranded after the initial Epstein story. But that has not stopped them from taking over a litany of U.S. 911 emergency call systems, which they now control, and they're run by IDF people, even though they put a few token Americans on their board. It's still an IDF project, arguably a front company, if you look at the other types of companies that Ehud Barak was creating with Israeli intelligence veterans in the same period that he created Rapportee, now Carbine. Peter Thiel, you know, now we have over the past year fresh documentation showing Thiel and Epstein's direct involvement in making those investments happen. Carbine is a direct way to create this type of surveillance system in which Palantir also excels. It no longer says this on its website, but when I reported on them, they had a a functionality on their program where if you're calling 911 within a district controlled by this company, they can harvest any and all data off of your smartphone if you use one, and basically create a pre-crime system determining if you or someone near you will call 911 and commit a crime at some point in the future. And again, Palantir is built around and was always envisioned to have the same pre-crime functionality and has developed obvious and very clear ties to the state of Israel, potentially given this new audio release that may have been forged by Epstein himself, which is certainly of great concern. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But Peter Thiel has been asked about his relationship with Epstein several times. He is a liar. And a lot of these people, I should point out, that have denied their closeness to Epstein, including figures in big tech like Elon Musk or Ehud Barak himself, or really any of these people, or Wexner, who we started with, they deny, and then proof comes out, even though what's been released is estimated to be 2% of all of what the U.S. government has on Epstein. 2%. And we know how many of these people are liars. Why are we believing them at their depositions when they're asked these softball questions and they're just like, I didn't know anything bad was happening. Why are we believing them? It's crazy. So I got a little off track there.
Well, that's why I'm not looking forward to the Clintons' deposition, because how hard is it to just play dumb? That's what politicians do.
They're great at it.
That's what to expect. There's even an email in the, you know, Epstein's like, oh, I have to give $1 million to the Clintons. Okay, I'll do it. What is this for again? He doesn't even know, right? And Hillary Clinton is out front saying, no, there's a lot of people involved. So can you discuss what you expect from the Clintons and, you know, what we know about the Clintons that is not being discussed by the media?
Yeah, so I think we can expect similar stuff to what Wexner did with the Clinton deposition. I doubt it will go too deep. Again, and I think, as has been the media coverage of Clinton this entire time, it will only focus on Clinton after he left the office of U.S. president. It will not focus on anything before then, even though Jeffrey Epstein went to the Clinton White House 17 times, and maybe more, because there is also the case where a lot of Clinton White House visitor logs have obviously fake names on them to cover up the identities of the people who were coming and going. I'm sorry, but 15 visits to the Clinton White House by Donald Duck, I don't really think that was Donald Duck in the same period, you know? So
no?
It could potentially be more. No, I mean, that's literally a real thing. So it could potentially be more, but that's 17 confirmed visits we know about. Every time he went, he had a different woman on his arm. And they were of age, though. I should point that out. But, you know, this is what Epstein learned from his weapons dealer friends in the 1980s. People like Adnan Khashoggi, for example, who on his yacht would have a harem of women, it was called, basically butter up top corporate CEOs and government officials so that he could, you know, grease the wheels for his arms deals and his business. Epstein was really no different, just he was running more businesses than arguably Khashoggi was, for a different set of employers, and some of the same employers as well when you count Israeli intelligence and the CIA in the mix. So again, there's going to be no scrutiny of these 1990s ties or these visits. A big reason why is the man that Epstein was meeting most of those times, Mark Middleton, because Mark Middleton was central to this aforementioned Chinagate scandal involving Southern Air Transport. He, when he was questioned in his role in Chinagate, pled the fifth 22 times, and then Clinton left office, 9/11 happened, and no one ever investigated Chinagate again. Even though it was basically I would argue one of the reasons for that is that it intimately, even though it's called Chinagate, it intimately involved Israel basically selling sensitive U.S. military technology using this Iran-Contra network to the Chinese military. Obviously, an outrageous scandal for U.S. national security, but that shows you how influential this network is, and how, you know, a lot of stuff about a China, let's give up all our rights for a Chinese arms race with AI is a complete bullcrap narrative, among other things. But basically, Mark Middleton is, you know, we know that Epstein it ended up dead in a prison cell. We know Jean-Luc Brunel ended up dead in a prison cell. The same year that Jean-Luc Brunel died in a prison cell. Mark Middleton died extremely suspiciously, even for other members of the Clinton kill list, as it's called. He allegedly wrapped around his neck an extension cord, hung himself, and then managed to shoot himself with a shotgun in the chest that was discovered 30 feet away, even though investigators initially said there was no weapon at the scene. And then immediately after, a judge sealed all photographic and other evidence of the crime so it would never be released to stop the spread of harmful conspiracy theories.
Right. A gun that's 30
feet
away.
You ask the Clintons about Mark Middleton, the you will see how insane this all is, and they will not go there, because obviously if they did, it would probably implicate Leslie Wexner, as well as a lot of other people in this network that have sold out U.S. national security, to ostensible adversaries for decades.
What about
Israel's direct involvement, our supposed greatest ally? And one of the reasons this was happening is that arguably the most influential billionaire manipulating Israel's security complex apparatus in that period was a billionaire named Shaul Eisenberg that had a lot of ties to the Chinese government, and it brokered their ties to Israel's national security state in the late 70s, and helped bring Robert Maxwell, among other people, to Mossad. He was a major operator. And so, there's no real scrutiny of that relationship. But I would argue this goes even further. This goes to something that Samuel Pisar, Robert Maxwell's longtime confidant and lawyer and a co-conspirator in some of these things I'm talking about, openly told Congress in the early 70s that what was happening was the end of the relevance of the nation state and the rise of what he called the trans-ideological corporation, where multinational Western corporations were getting in business with state-owned corporations in China and Russia, the communist bloc, basically, and we're building a network, an economic network that would supersede the national governments around the world and would basically take over the world. And he was asked by Congress if this was bad, and he was like, not really. And he said this in the early 70s. And he, along with people like the heads of IBM, people from PepsiCo, people from some of the biggest corporations in the United States, openly created committees to make this happen.
Gosh.
And he probably had intelligence ties. He represented Steve Jobs for Apple, and Steve Jobs was like, I don't know if he works for the CIA or the KGB. Probably
wow.
both, because if you look at Robert Maxwell, he was definitely involved with the KGB, among
yes.
other groups. He worked with KGB officers to spirit gold out of the Soviet Union, and a lot of these guys were involved in capital flight from Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union. They funneled a lot of it to Israel, where they helped get and install Russian mobsters like Semyon Moglovich, get them Israeli passports so they could penetrate the U.S. financial system. And our current president had involvement with some of those characters through his real estate deals and helped them launder money. So I don't really think we're going to see meaningful prosecution of these groups with the current crowd that's in charge.
Before we move
on,
they've
been on the take.
Before we move on from the Clintons, the Clinton Foundation stands out to me as a major question, something to focus on. Do you think any and the Epstein's ties to the Clinton Foundation and how it was used, whether it was for sex trafficking operations around the
yeah.
world, medicine, et cetera? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the Clinton Foundation, I would argue, was largely set up. Major aspects of it were provably set up by Epstein. That's particularly true for the Clinton Health Access Initiative and a lot of its work in Africa with AIDS, which obviously coincides with a lot of vaccination policy. And at the same time that Clinton set up his foundation, Bill Gates set up his foundation. They collaborate together on those things. And Epstein has also obviously had an interest in these types of networks as well. For health, they say,
right.
But obviously, in the COVID era, we became a lot more skeptical of those types of quote unquote philanthropies. And obviously, Bill Gates, as well as Epstein himself, as particularly revealed by some of these new releases, but it was known before, have an outsized interest in eugenics and also transhumanism, which is the modern rebranding of eugenics. Even some of the people that used to run the British Eugenics Society, like Julian Huxley, authored texts in the mid 20th century talking about how transhumanism was the future of eugenics, and this is how they'd sell it to a new generation. These people are intimately involved with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, Epstein was intimately involved in those aspects. But we have to go back to Epstein being intimately involved also in illicit cash flows, which the Clintons absolutely love and have loved for a long time, ever since Clinton was, governor of Arkansas through the presidency and after. And so, you know, Clinton Foundation has obviously been dogged by what were once rumors, but thanks to WikiLeaks became, you know, proven that it was basically a pay-to-play scam and that they were taking money and then returning political favors when Hillary Clinton was, you know, Secretary of State, or they thought she might even be president, right? And then after, you know, she lost to Trump in 2016, it dried up, essentially. But also, you know, in addition to the other philanthropies, you have the Clinton Global Initiative, which was allegedly Epstein's idea, according to his defense lawyers. He was part of the core team that developed the concept for the Clinton Global Initiative, which is kind of like a Clinton brokered Davos, yes, you know, World Economic Forum style meeting. And, you know, they passed money around to, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell's Terramar, for example, you know, among other things. And so, you know, Epstein was obviously very sought out in the not-profit world, arguably because he was very good at tax shelters. And a lot of these billionaires want to, you know, get tax write-offs or not have to pay money in tax. And so, you know, setting up these philanthropies the right way, when Epstein's background, going back to his time at Bear Stearns, was in tax evasion, you know, obviously, I think that points to why they were so interested in having him be involved in setting up their nonprofits. And there's also the fact that you had Epstein, you know, I think it was Bill Gates, wanted to talk to Epstein about getting a Nobel Prize, apparently because he had influence over the Nobel Prize committee. So, I mean, it went even beyond nonprofits. And so a lot of this world that the public has been shown about these do-gooder nonprofits and these do-gooder philanthropists, it's, you know, Epstein was an expert in money laundering. He also became an expert in reputation laundering for these billionaires, most of which are criminals and some of whom are provably connected to organized crime.
When I was just leaving CBS in about 2010, 2011, I was asked to pitch a panel to the Clinton Global Initiative as a tech expert, because I had been at CNET and CBS as a tech reporter. And I pitched something. I had just read Jaron Lanier about, like, fighting your addiction to social media. And I pitched something about not being addicted to social media, and they were like, nope, get out. They didn't want that.
We want them to be addicted
to social media. We are trying to entrap them. So goodbye. So I never got asked to speak, thankfully. That's just a little anecdote I thought you'd enjoy. Okay.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Glad
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead, Philip.
So I'm like, listening to all these ties and then just thinking, you know, like, with Kash Patel coming out, like, basically saying Epstein trafficked to no one, it's very clear that the people involved in this, the power behind it, want the fall guy to be Epstein, and nobody's buying it. So is there somebody else of equal level that they can turn and point to? Who's going to be the next fall guy? They can be, actually, this guy is really important in this. Somebody has to take the fall. And since Epstein can't do it because that's not working, like, is there somebody else that they can kind of, like, point it at him? And could it be Les Wexner? Or is he still too powerful? Or is it just they just have stick with the whole Epstein traffic to no one?
Yeah, I think Wexner's way too powerful. I think the risk of trying to go after someone at the same level of Epstein is that they might talk. Right. So, like, Jean-Luc Brunel was apparently, sorry, my glasses keep being super wonky, was in talks with to speak to U.S. prosecutors. And then he, like, about Epstein, and then disappeared. And then he ends up dead in a jail cell. You know, people that have information that could potentially incriminate beyond the spectrum they want to keep the public focused on, you know, that's threatening. And so if someone realizes they're becoming the fall guy, they may try and squeal, or they may try point the finger at someone else. That opens up a whole nother level of risk. And they had been building, you know, ever since Epstein died in 2019, this narrative that he was the lone baddie, and thank goodness he's dead, just like Bill Gates said when he was interviewed about it a few years ago. Well, he's dead now, so it doesn't matter. Right. And so I think they're going to keep running with that, honestly, as long as they possibly can. because I think otherwise it opens up, whether you go above or, you know, at the same level, varying degrees of risk are there. I mean, maybe they might try and go for someone that worked for Epstein, ones that aren't already protected by the sweetheart deal, the non-prosecution agreement. So you can forget about his executive assistant, Leslie Groff, that helped him plan a lot of this stuff. But maybe someone like his lawyers, but that should be protected by client lawyer privilege, right? So I don't know. Maybe his brother, Mark Epstein, who's been kind of given a pass by a lot of the people that have interviewed him, given that he owned these buildings that were bugged by Israeli security, government security, and full of these trafficked girls, which, by the way, in terms of, you know, the amount of victims, I mean, we don't really know how many victims there were, but it was probably a lot given the volume of girls that were known to be in those apartments. And a lot of them were from places that don't get talked about a lot. So the most well-known victims that we know about are Americans, but a lot of them were from Eastern Europe and Brazil. How many Brazilian and Eastern European
there's girls a 9-year-old have come forward? Referenced. Yeah, 9-year-old Brazilian, very cute or sexy or something like that.
Yeah, and some are from France. You know, I mean, this was obviously something that was global in scope, and there's really been no interesting in disentangling the global aspects of even just the sex trafficking operation.
But again, and the these past are people tense that were using, though, suggest, I feel like it's still going on, and we don't. Like, how could we pull the thread to know how it's still going on? Because, like you said, Epstein was not the ringleader.
Yeah, so like I said earlier, I think that a lot of this, at least with respect to blackmail, has moved to the digital realm because they compile profiles on you based on your data that are scraped from everything you do online. And that ends up in a Palantir database accessible to every single U.S. intelligence agency. There's 18 of them, and Palantir contracts with every single one. So on the other side of the blackmail angle, obviously Epstein didn't do this just for blackmail. I mean, he was a trafficker of many things. He was known for moving money from place to place, arms from place to place, and underage women and also above age women that were young adults from place to place. So that is essentially the role he occupied. And so to understand, again, how, you know, in terms of this, of the sex trafficking thing, obviously there was part of him that did it because he personally sexually benefited from that. And there are, you know, emails following his conviction showing that he was still talking about women that were either from these places he had drawn upon before and engaged predatorially and criminally with them. So he may not have done it at the same scale he did it before, because, you know, some of the agencies, for example, that he had used once he became, by his own definition, radioactive after his first arrest, it was harder to publicly do business with Epstein. But he obviously had no women, no problem finding women to traffic after then, and girls. So, you know, this is obviously something that people of that power level, if you want to call it that, are able to engage in if it is their proclivity. And obviously Epstein is not the only billionaire pervert in the United States. And so a lot of these people with access to money have obviously probably been able to access this because they've been doing it for decades and decades and decades and decades, and oftentimes with state protection because they get involved with intelligence agencies.
Our guest is Whitney Webb. We've got some new video that just was released from the GOP Oversight Committee, and I want to play. This is Les Wexner speaking to that they just released, and where he's claiming that Jeffrey Epstein specifically told him that he was a financial advisor to Elde Rothschilds and the family of the Rothschilds. So I want to play this and just get your take on this, Whitney.
I think it was his experience at an industrial level, like working for a big company like Bear Stearns, and then he had done personal work for the Rothschild family in France.
Personal wealth management, essentially?
I don't know.
Okay. We've seen some reports that he would present himself as a bounty hunter, that he would find people's missing money. Do you recall him saying anything like that?
No. Well, specifically, I talked to Elde Rothschild, and so I mentioned that earlier. So he represented their whole family. So there have been a whole bunch of people. I mean, most of them I never would have met, but I knew L.A. I never met people, but there were people that called me that either insinuated or said they were knew Jeffrey through a financial relationship. And so, I mean, they could have been actors, but in the time, a guy calls me up. I'll give you an example. No, because I want you to understand this, because it's so confusing to me. He would say, like, I'm providing financial advice to the founders of Google. I'm providing financial advice to Jeff Bezos. I'm providing financial advice for the chief technologist at Google. And I'm in good company, because these are really smart guys with a lot of money. And you have to put yourself in the mindset of if my attorney said, you know, he was qualified to argue in front of the Supreme Court, I'd believe him. I didn't say to call the Supreme Court and say, tell me, is he really an attorney or did he do this?
So, Whitney, as you talked
to easy one to of the biggest Lex Wessner,
as you mentioned, one of the biggest pieces of this is the financial ties, right? That still needs to be pulled apart. This is one of the biggest pieces of the Epstein story here. Did anything he say there surprise you at all? That was Lex Wessner.
Well, actually, what he said is known. So, for example, as far as the Google co-founders, he managed Sergey Brin's family trust and had very significant ties. I believe that came out during the J.P. Morgan case in the USVI, where Sergey Brin was actually subpoenaed, but it was settled and never went to court. So I guess that didn't go anywhere. But he was intimately involved with Sergey Brin in particular. And I know Ghislaine Maxwell had significant ties to Jeff Bezos, and the two of them cultivated lots of ties to the biggest names in big tech, Mark Zuckerberg, Reid Hoffman, Elon Musk, and Peter Thiel, among others. So that definitely rings true. And then, of course, Epstein claiming to represent the Rothschilds. That's obviously been made public in the emails as well. But I've argued in my book that, you know, after Robert Maxwell's death in 1991, he pops up with Ghislaine in public for the first time and is, for all intents and purposes, the heir to Robert Maxwell's portfolio, probably with Israeli intelligence and probably with some of the illicit financial operations that Maxwell was engaged with at the time, and also his link with some of these organized crime networks I was talking about earlier. But why did Robert Maxwell come to the United States? He made this big entrance into New York specifically a year or two before he died, and brought Ghislaine with him. And the reason he did that was specifically for the Rothschild banking family. And this is actually in a New York Times article that I reference in my book. I forget the exact title of the article, but it's like the Rothschilds mega dealer or something like that. But if you look it up on the archive, dealer is spelled wrong. They switched like the E and the A for some reason, probably to make it harder for you to find. But basically it says that the Rothschild banking dynasty that at that time, which was this article came out in the 1980s, they saw it as an error that they had never properly established a significant foothold on U.S. Wall Street. They had focused instead in Europe and other theaters. And so in the 1980s, they created a Rothschild entity on Wall Street, and they had it focus on mergers and acquisitions, specifically M&As. And to do so, they recorded, and to ensure their success, they recruited some corporate raiders that they had a close relationship with from Britain. One of them was Robert Maxwell, and the other one was Jimmy Goldsmith, who was a cousin to the Rothschilds and also involved in the same organized crime intelligence linked nexus that Robert Maxwell was also tied to via the Claremont Club, which I discuss in my book. And Jimmy Goldsmith, actually, Epstein was met a lot of his elite friends in New York, even though he's from there, but in the elite circle for the first time, actually at Jimmy Goldsmith's mansion in the area in the 1970s.
Wow.
Right. Nice. After coming back from the United Kingdom on a backpacking trip when he dropped out of college, which I would argue it all kind of goes back to that crowd. So Goldsmith and Maxwell basically come over and engage in these M&As fronting for the Rothschild family specifically. And then Epstein takes over the portfolio. And then we know now, actually, it's been coming out, I think, since there were new releases of Epstein information, I think, in the year after my book came out. So that would be 2023 or so, downstream of the USVI case, when it was settled, talking about his ties to the D. Rothschilds specifically, which is the French side of that banking dynasty. And if you have been paying attention, you would know for some time that Evelyn de Rothschild in particular, very, very close to Jeffrey Epstein. She actually wrote a letter to Bill Clinton in 1995 that he should meet Jeffrey Epstein and talk to him about currency stabilization. So this is something that's been going on for a long time, and he's been very involved with this particular family, which it goes without saying has extremely deep ties to the state of Israel for an extremely long period of his career. And again, I would argue that if any family is untouchable, that's one of them. And I doubt investigators would get very far in probing that family.
Right. So, Whitney, will you hang with us for a few more minutes? We just got some more. Do you have to run? I just want to make sure that we're not.
I have to pick up my kids. So,
how much?
Maybe, I do too. Actually,
8 more minutes.
8 more minutes. Okay, we got some new video in, and they're starting to release pieces of this deposition, and it's starting to flow out. So, I want to play this piece for you right now.
Did you ever spend time with Epstein and Donald Trump?
Together?
Yes.
I would answer this question accurately. I would go to some of the Victoria's Secret fashion shows because they're very important to the brand. At some of the fashion shows, Jeffrey was there and some Trump was there. And I remember, because Trump would always introduce himself to me. And I always thought it was kind of odd that he was at the fashion show because he had nothing to do with fashion.
Did you ever spend time with Epstein?
So he finds it odd that Trump would go to a fashion show, and he had to go to these Victoria's Secret fashion shows, not because he wanted to see beautiful women in their underwear backstage, but because it was so important to the brand.
Yeah, I don't really buy that. Well, actually, I mean, it's possible he wasn't interested in the women. There's been rumors for a long time from local Ohio journalists that Wexner is not actually interested in women, and that his wife is kind of, you know, a beard, as it were.
Interesting.
Which is very possible, because in some of these files, there are, I believe, allegations from one confidential human source alleging that Epstein and Wexner engaged in relations themselves. And that, has been alleged also, I mean, years prior by a local Ohio journalist that covered Wexner and Epstein for a very long time in the 1990s and early 2000s, named Bob Fetrakis. So, I mean, maybe he wasn't actually interested. But what Wexner is interested in, by his own admission, according to this New York Magazine interview that he gave in the 1980s, is accumulating more and more power and control. And the reason he says that in that article, it's so crazy, you have to go and read it, is because he considers himself demonically possessed by what he calls a debuk, which is the Yiddish term for a demonic possession. And he says he had it when he was a child, it left when he was a teen, and then when he was 40, it returned to him and makes him want to accumulate more and more power and become more and more powerful and grow his business. Given everything we know, that's just the icing on the cake, as it were.
Well, some of the other stuff that you know that maybe we haven't talked about here briefly before you have to go is, I want to just touch on the J.D. Vance connection here. He, as you reported, I mean, he did a fundraiser at Wexner's house to raise money.
When he was a low ranking guy. And I would argue that's because Ohio people, every Ohio politician has to try and kneel at Wexner to get anywhere. And that would go for people running for Ohio governor right now, like Vivek Ramaswamy.
also Wexner's connections to AIPAC, and so this deep web with Israel. But like, I think you've reported over the years that Wexner funded or groomed like a lot of the AIPAC people who then, of course, lobby.
Yeah,
and
well,
then
his foundation did, but he controls it. And the people he put in charge of it are have ties to this. It's a secret society, but a lot of the people in my book are openly part of it. It's called B'nai B'rith. It's the entity that gave birth to the Anti-Defamation League, which trains, the FBI and law enforcement people. But their board of overseers involved a lot of people that pop up in this scandal for different reasons. But people like Edmund Safra in the 1980s was there when Wexner was recruiting from there for his foundation. Edgar Bronfman was there, and allegedly the Bronfmans is part of why Epstein ended up leaving Bear Stearns in 1981. Max Fisher, who was Wexner considers him one of his business mentors, or main business mentors, you could argue he had about three or so, and a lot of these figures that he was really connected to. So he pulled from there, and they have a lot of influence. Roy Cohn, who I've written about extensively, he was a mentor to Donald Trump, but also a sex blackmailer, intimately involved with organized crime. He represented mob bosses like Tony Salerno, among others. He was involved in a litany of very shady stuff. He was also a big B'nai B'rith guy, and his father actually ran it, who was a judge in New York, the New York chapter, which is considered to be the most powerful. You could argue that the Wexner Foundation is kind of an extension of those power networks. And they've been that foundation has intimate connections to most of the top people at AIPAC and a litany of high power Israeli public officials.
And we just confirmed the part of this deposition that just confirmed that Wexner just confirmed under oath, and the GOP has now released this video, and he says under oath that he handed over total control, power of attorney, hundreds of millions of dollars, mm-hmm. his entire empire essentially, to Jeffrey Epstein because he was referred to him by L. de Rothschild. So basically the Rothschild's involvement here is the tie that like brought him into this.
Well, he said for a long time that he met Epstein through Robert Meister, who was an insurance executive. I think at the time he was at ANA in 1986 or 1987. Some sources say 1985. And Epstein became intimately involved in Wexner's inner circle around 1987 or so. And then in the early 90s obtained all this power of attorney. But if you recall what I said a few minutes ago about how Wexner views himself and his where his ambitions for power come from. If he wants to become more powerful and wealthy, right. Isn't it interesting that he would seek out someone like Jeffrey Epstein and give him complete power over his affairs to do just that for him?
Yeah, it's remarkable. And as you pointed out, too, like this whole naive billionaire play that Wexner tries to pull off. I've even seen videos now that they're just releasing where his lawyer is reaching over to him, telling him and he says to him in his ear, if you answer any of these questions with more than five words, I'll fucking kill you. Those are his words. The lawyer leaning over and telling Les Wexner not to say anything.
Like, yeah.
And you got to play the naive old man billionaire. Like, I don't know. I'm just an old man. It's like the mob. It's an old mob trick, right?
Isn't Trump odd that he'd be into models?
Right.
I don't know. I think it was pretty known by the time Victoria's Secret launched their fashion show in the late 90s that Trump was very into models and teamed up with Elite Models and John Casablancas to do stuff at the Plaza Hotel he owned, and met them through Studio 54 parties. Again, Roy Cohn was involved in that, and got connected with this world of supermodels. He married models. I mean, it's like, okay, well, how odd that Trump is into models.
Yeah, it's shocking. Whitney, you're incredible, incredible reporting as always. So Unlimited Hangout is your website, of course. You have new reporting coming out. When can people expect your big new reporting to come out here on unlimitedhangout.com?
I mean, we'll see. Hopefully the next week or two, it should be out. I don't have that much left. So happy to be wrapping that one up because that's been sitting there for a long time. But I guess there was a reason for that. And now I can add a lot of these new emails to it to flesh out the story even more. But we have a lot coming up at Unlimited Hangout, a lot of pretty spicy investigations that are Epstein related, including one specifically into Wexner's personal fiefdom where he hosted Congress, New Albany, Ohio, and a lot of ties there between Wexner and Epstein and things that are happening there right now.
Wow. Whitney Webb has got to run and pick up her kids. We're glad to have you back.
I do.
Glad to have you back into the mix here, providing your incredible research and voice. We need you out there. that's for sure.
Thanks.
It was a notable silence when Whitney was gone for many, many months. So thanks. Hope everything's great with you and your family. And thanks for joining us here, Whitney. Great to see you.
It is. Thanks.